The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Let's walk the talk
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
2021. That's Africa Nacity. Absa is a registered FSP. Welcome to The Money Show on this Friday evening. And what a dreadful Friday it has been from the disclosure by South African scientists that they discovered a new variant of COVID-19 to market reaction, which has been massive and negative. We'll catch up with Andrew Bryson, who's a portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, all about that this evening. It's gone around the globe. Then something slightly more cheerful at 20 to 7, Anna Rosholt, who makes bespoke jewelry in our Friday file. We dedicate our Friday file to people who create products of luxury and greatness and awesomeness and run their businesses doing precisely that. Nick Dreyer from Feldskun as to why he ducked and dived and dodged Black Friday, as many of you seem to have done. Well done. And we'll also this evening a big focus on this latest strain of COVID-19.
The Money Show
with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
Well, a dreadful day today amidst the global knee-jerk reaction in the face of the uncertainty of this new variant of COVID-19 identified in South Africa. The World Health Organization has cautioned countries against hastily imposing travel restrictions linked to the new B11529 variant of COVID-19, saying they should take instead a risk-based and scientific approach. But that came too late. The UK hit first. Others, including Singapore, have followed. Sibongile Mafu, who's a colleague on KFM in Cape Town, saying that South Africa is being punished for being the smartest and most honest kid in the science class. And I think that summarizes it really nicely, because the variant doesn't necessarily emanate from South Africa, but certainly it was detected here because we're good at detecting this stuff. We've got great scientists, and now we're going to be paying the price for that as being the canary in the coal mine, so to speak. President Cyril Ramaphosa is going to meet the Coronavirus Command Council on Sunday to assess the new developments, and then no doubt there'll be a meeting, and then he'll dispense his latest mechanism to try and restrict the spread of this variant across South Africa. It'll take a few weeks, however, to understand this variant's impact. The researchers are going to be working overtime to determine how transmissible it is, how it's going to affect you, how vaccines are going to respond to this as well. Stock markets around the globe falling 3-4%. Paris, London, New York, Johannesburg, all under pressure. The Rand lost value too, and we'll talk about that more in just a little bit. Anthony Leeming is the Group Chief Executive at Sun International, and you must have been gearing up, I think, Anthony, cautiously for a recovery Christmas season. Are you concerned as to how this may play out?
I get you, Bruce. Look, obviously, concerning to us, we weren't expecting a lot of foreign visitors, so we depend on the foreigners. But clearly, if they enter the Christmas place, that could be a concern to us.
And so what is your planning telling you? I know it's early days, but how are you planning now for this curveball?
Look, I think, like I said, at this stage, you know, there hasn't been a lot of cancellations from the local side. I think we were looking at largely a local sort of festive season. So we have a lot of people inquiring what our cancellation policy if restrictions are put in place. But we certainly don't have to overreact. We were only really expecting foreigners to pick up next year. So I think most of it is really a wait and see what comes out with this variant, and is it as transmittable, and does the vaccine work, and hopefully the restrictions will be lifted. But that's sort of for our clever scientists, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, when everything, you know, when the only tool you have to deal with the problem is a hammer, every solution looks like a nail. And we've seen our government become very, very tough in its lockdowns and lockdown policies over time. Are you concerned that we could see a sort of a Christmas of 2020 being repeated in 2021? Is that a concern?
No, look, obviously that's concerning, but I'd hope not. I think what we saw would happen in the third wave, you know, the infection rates sort of came down despite restrictions have been lifted in provinces like KZN, which spike long after us. So one would hope that there's just enough vaccinations, enough sort of herd protection at the moment, and you'd hope that the government doesn't overreact. So I certainly think we're in a better place than we were last year, December, but yes, it's always a concern.
And so what are your policies, by the way? I mean, if there are tough lockdowns and if it's going to be a no fun time at Sun City, nobody can go to the Valley of the Waves and use the slides and go to the casinos because of lockdowns, or there's going to be a booze ban, which of course affects your F&B revenues over that time. Will you allow people to postpone? Will you do refunds? What is your policy going to be around a December 2020 style lockdown, should it occur?
Look, we've got a very flexible policy, and obviously we prefer people to postpone. But if people need refunds, we have been very open and allow them to do so. So we're certainly not going to hold this against people, unfortunately. It's a very difficult time for them and for all of us. But ultimately, we'll certainly make sure that the policy is in favour of our guests.
Thank you to Anthony Leeming, Chief Executive at Sun International this evening. Chifiwa Chivengwa, Chief Executive at the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. And the tourism industry earlier this week was making preemptive noises, Chifiwa, just saying, please don't lock us down, please don't lock us down. Were you anticipating an announcement like this? Had somebody alerted the tourism industry to the likelihood of a new strain, Chifiwa?
Well, thank you for having me, Bruce. I think that we've always been cautious, especially approaching the festive season, given what has happened in the past years. We anticipate the fact that we had elections, that the numbers are going to increase a little bit. We didn't anticipate until, I would say, about a day or two ago that there is indeed a new variant. It's something that's a worst-case scenario for us. That we have been fearing, that how we message what we find in the country is quite important, because indeed what we've done is a repeat of the beta variant, and it's not helping the South African economy, let alone the global economy. And as we have seen, that the stock exchanges around the world have really gone down. But communication is key here, and we don't want lockdown because domestic tourism is the only segment of tourism that we have left.
And it was setting out, teeing up to be quite a good domestic tourism season this Christmas. I think the South Africans, we're getting used to the idea of travelling. We're seeing more and more of it, and we were seeing quite a convincing pickup in domestic tourism. I think things were going pretty well.
No, absolutely. Things were going very well, until yesterday when this announcement was made. As much as we have the international markets that are no longer there because everything is shutting down, every other country is shutting down to us except the U.S., domestic travel is what we have, and we've seen some good numbers coming from domestic travelers, and we will like to invite domestic travelers to take confidence in that we are fighting hard to make sure that we don't have lockdowns. And I just finished the meeting at Medlec now. And there's a consensus that, we have to get tourism going, and we need the presidents to reassure the nation that, tourism will go ahead, and people, should be assured that there are protocols in place. But, domestic market has been the savior, and it will continue to be the savior. We will continue to build up on it. We will reopen international, travel, because this variant that we have announced yesterday is not only in South Africa. It's there in Belgium. It was found today, it was announced today in Belgium from someone who never traveled to South Africa, who went to Egypt via Turkey and came back and had a variant. So it may be present all over the world, but the fact that we've done this good job and we may have mishaps in terms of how we announce it and how we communicate it does not necessarily mean that it's only present here. So we have to work together with the world, multilateral institution, to make sure that things are done properly and there are no travel restrictions among nations.
Chifiwa Chivengwa, thank you very much indeed. Now, Chifiwa represents corporates and large tourism operators, and of course Sun International is the biggest operator in the country with its five-star properties. What about the smaller guys? What about smaller players? Rosemary Anderson is chairperson at FedHasa, and we've seen so many people who are in the B&B space, so many people who have operated Airbnbs, so many smaller operators. Simply go to the wall, Rosemary. And these are the guys who are the most vulnerable, I suspect. Should we see a strong public state reaction to the potential risk of a new outbreak?
Absolutely, Bruce, because they're coming off 20 months of hardship, basically. And as Chief just said earlier, we've just been starting to see really green shoots. So it's such a great pity. And that's why we're trying to preempt government's announcement on Sunday to not do things like shutting down beaches and things like that, when at the same time a mall is opened. Obviously, being outside in an open space on a beach, it just makes no sense to shut a beach down and therefore not allow, or no one would want to go to a tourism area with such a beach area if there are no access to beaches, but at the same time you can go to malls. So we really hope this time round that government introduces lockdown measures which still allow hospitality and tourism to operate in a financially sustainable way, because really this continued lockdown where hospitality and tourism is the most severely affected is going to dwarf the damage that COVID is causing, because there is such a poverty pandemic happening in our industry.
That is the problem, and government showed itself to be completely inept, and in fact broke the law with its mechanisms in the first lockdown to support the tourism industry when it was just for BEE players. I think we've had a court case that has found that fairly recently, Rosemary. So you've got a state that can't support an industry that is a massive employer of some of the poorest workers in the country who desperately need the income. And as a result of that, you are subjecting people to absolute poverty if you take their livelihoods away.
Absolutely. And our sector employs directly and indirectly 1.5 million. And of those 1.5 million, it's estimated that they also, 7 people depend on them. So it's a significant portion of our working population and our citizens that are actually negatively affected. So we really hope that we will do things differently this time and actually learn from past mistakes.
Thank you, Rosemary Anderson, the chairperson at FedHalsa.
You're with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
Eyewitness News will update us on Joe Patla, the health minister, Dr. Joe Patla, the health minister's statement this evening about today's announcement of a new variant of COVID-19. He's saying this evening that they are confident that vaccines can still protect from severe illness and death, yet to be proven, of course. And Claudio's irritated because he said, why did South Africans announce the variant is so contagious when they have no proof it is? Nobody announced that it's so contagious, Claudio. They just announced that there is a new variant. There is a fear that it may be contagious. That is the reality. Well, we'll talk to you about console glass. There's something new breaking on console glass. But Nick Dreyer up first. And rather than participating in the mania of Black Friday, which doesn't turn to have been that manic, certainly in Eyewitness News at 6 o'clock this evening, you had a report that suggested that there were some people out on Black Friday, but there wasn't the elbow rush and fierce fighting over TVs and stuff. That all happened in July. Not that anybody really is participating that much in Black Friday. And so Veldskoen and Plucky, which are co-founded by Nick Dreyer, to use the attention normally lavished on Black Friday as a force for good. And they've decided to say, hold on a second, let's sort of push back against the tack of Black Friday. Nick Dreyer on the line to us from Cape Town. He's the chief executive and the co-founder at Veldskoen this evening. And rather than give discounts, you're giving away your entire pairs of shoes this Black Friday, Nick Dreyer. And it's actually quite a nice feel-good version of something that's become very grabby and very sort of quite a ferocious sort of spend fest that you pushed back against this year.
Bruce, thank you as always for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. You know, first and foremost, though, it's a difficult day, and our thoughts go out to all the folks in the hospitality industry. What a tough bit of news today. It is Black Friday. It is this manic sort of consumer spend period. And Veldskoen and Plucky decided this year that instead of investing our ad money in trying to lock as many customers into buying discounted shoes, it's always sat uncomfortable with us because we feel that there's value in our shoes and we just don't want to discount it for the sake of discounting. But what we wanted to do was to try and lift the spirits of South Africa by bringing an ethos of giving. And so we actually discounted our shoes by 100%. We're doing it for the weekend. But with a catch, which is that if you qualify to get a pair of shoes, and by the way, the qualification is effectively a lucky draw. If you do manage to get a pair of shoes for 100% off, that you have to give it to somebody, and to try and bring a little bit of joy to somebody, and to try and curate and build on the spirit of giving in what is effectively the giving festive season. We felt that was what we wanted to do this Black Friday season. We also feel that it's getting, you know, it gets longer and longer. It went from a day to a week into a month. And it was, we just felt that this might be a slightly better way to do it. We've also done a wonderful thing with Plucky, where, you know, if you buy a pair of Plucky, we in fact donate the funds to the NSRI's Pink is for Boys program, which literally saves lives. And I think, you know, at a period where there's a hyper focus on saving money, I think big things like giving and helping to save lives is maybe a little bit more important. We're in a very fortunate position we can do that, and we're grateful to be able to. So we've had a good day, we're having a good weekend, and none of it has to do with revenue. It's wonderful.
Thank you, Nick Dreher, and what a lovely idea it is. And it's, yeah, you don't want to discount your product. You've got a great product, and you don't want to discount it. It isn't a commodity product. So you say to yourself, how do we have an impact, a positive impact, without, you know, undermining the power of our brand? How do we enhance our brand? And that's what Nick Dreher and the guys at Plucky and at Veldtskoen are doing.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Okay, let me summarize it for you. Paris down 4, Germany down 4, London down 3, the US between 2 and 3% down, and the JSE nearly 3% lower too. What a horrible day on global markets, Andrew Bryson, Portfolio Manager at Sunlum Private Wealth. Summarize it for us, if you would.
Hi, Bruce. Yeah, red all over today. Not much else going on, unfortunately. Sort of overshadowing a bit of the Black Friday hot is what we're seeing in markets today.
Yeah, absolutely. Huge sell-off. Why particularly the financial sector? Banks and insurers between 7 and 9% lower. This was a panicked rush for the door. Why the financial sector particularly?
Yeah, well, it's a sector that has seen some buying over the last few months, and I guess people were looking to sort of a recovery on our local market. We already saw bad debt provisions were being released, and these banks are in good shape. And I think investors may be sort of rather taking some money off the table and sitting on the side and seeing how the latest challenge to our economy is going to play out.
And it's not just here, though. I mean, Bidcorp's share price move today defined that. An 8% decline in Bidcorp. Bidcorp delivers food to restaurants across the globe, almost everywhere except the United States. And I guess the 8% slump in Bidcorp, as well as a huge slump in the oil price all the way down to $75.50 a barrel from $82-$83, tells us that the world is really concerned that this particular variant of COVID that's been identified in South Africa could very well lead to Austria-style lockdowns in other parts of the world.
Yeah, Bruce, look, I think it's a knee-jerk reaction moment. I think people don't know, and obviously, you know, we've experienced very hard lockdowns and the impact they can have. So I guess there's a sense of investors rather saying, well, let's see how it plays out, and once we have more confidence, then we can get back in. I mean, if we look at some of the hospitality stocks today, they got absolutely smashed. But maybe a little bit of buying at the lower levels. But likes of City Lodge down 15%, Sorgel down 14%. So it's really a tough day for sectors that are likely to be most impacted by what we've seen.
And again, it's for investors, I suppose, to identify whether or not they believe that once we're through this, these share prices recover, of course. And we've seen sharp recoveries in these tourism stocks and in financial services stocks and a bunch of shares as markets have normalized a little bit up to and including yesterday. Too soon to call it a buying opportunity?
Yeah, Bruce, I think maybe we just need to take a step back a bit. And if you look at how strong the U.S. market and the European market have been this year, I think the U.S. is up still over 20%, even with today's fall. So maybe investors looking for an excuse to take some money off the table. It has been a good year, particularly in developed market economies. And those markets have done well. You never know what the reason for a sell-off is going to be, and it looks like the SA variant might be just that.
It's not an SA variant, Andrew Bryson. Stop calling it that. You will be fined a year's salary if we ever call it the SA variant. It is a variant identified in South Africa. Stop falling into the trap. You're banned from using that term ever again. Are you chastised?
Absolutely, Bruce. The media.
No, that's the trouble. That don't Don't blame the media. Engage your own brain. Andrew Bryson, portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. It infuriates me. Don't use that terminology. I know it was a slip of the tongue. But don't. It is not the South African variant. It is not the South African variant. Eyewitness News Time.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Proud winners of the best service in Africa at the Euromoney Cash Management Survey 2021. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
In all the excitement, I've lost my notes on Consul Glass. Now, Consul Glass is an interesting South African company. It's been part of the, I want to call it part of the furniture, but it's not, I suppose. It's been part of the South African business landscape for 75 years, and it is the biggest producer of glass products on the African continent. It's a very, very significant player. And news today of a buyout proposal for Consul Glass. And it is the latest, I suppose, in a long line of iconic South African companies to face foreign buyouts. And foreigners are seeing huge value in South African companies. We've got Distell, we had Pioneer Foods, we've had so many others. And now Consul Glass is the latest. It's owned by a number of private equity players. And it's the holding company for Consul Glass South Africa, for Kenya, Nigeria, and Juniper Glass in Ethiopia. Now, the buyers are the Adar Group, and they want to buy 100% of Consul Glass for 10 billion rand. They've got 20 glass production facilities in Europe, 14 in the United States, and this move into Consul Glass will be their first into Africa. And Adar Group is one of the top three glass packaging producers in the world, and it's bringing its global footprint to the African continent. So it's going to be buying for 10.1 billion rand. Consul Glass from this assortment of private equity players. Consul Glass, no transparency there. And no, they're not ready to talk yet. We did ask them if they would come on and share something of parts of the tale. But as so often with these particular transactions, there are lots of I's to dot and T's to cross before anybody can really talk about it. Welcome to The Money Show. And Anna Rosholt joins us this evening, the founder and owner of Anna Rosholt Jewelry, in our Friday File. Now, Friday File is where we look at the luxury side of life. And anybody who's looking for gifts at this time of the year can get some good tips from our Friday File over the months past. And Anna, when did you start making jewelry? Because this isn't something that you kind of just fall into with a hammer, a chisel, and some precious metals and sparkly stones one day.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks so much for having me. Yes, no, you're quite right. My jewelry journey started in university. I studied jewelry design in the fine art department at Stellenbosch. And yeah, I've just always had a love for details and jewelry. And yeah, so that was probably about 9 years ago now that I started the business.
Jewelry design and jewelry manufacture are two different things. One's an engineering task and one's an artistic task. What married the two?
For sure. My focus is mostly design. That's what I really, really love. Mm-hmm. I am trained in manufacturing as well. I think that it's good to sort of play to your strengths. And I really love the design aspect and coming up with interesting shapes and textures and sort of proportions. So that's what really interests me.
Talk to me about your studio. Talk to me about the space that you inhabit, the people that you work with, that get you from drawing. And I've seen pictures on your website of you sketching in notebooks, and it's all very elegant, and it looks like the early Walt Disney sketches of Mickey Mouse, for example. It's the beginnings of something great.
Yes, we have a lot of fun in studio. There's a team of four of us. It's four ladies. And we do some manufacturing on site and we do design. So we get, in terms of custom pieces, we get gemstones in and we have a look at those together with our clients, which is always really awesome. So we source that and we've constantly got a flow of interesting gemstones and people in and out the studio. So it's a really fun, like, social feeling. And the four of us girls have a really great time. We pack orders and we chat to clients and it's really, really nice.
And it, I mean, it's work. Of course, it's work, but it does sound like it's a lifestyle work, a job as well. Because, I mean, here you are, you because you do bespoke jewelry, and because you then somebody comes in and says, "Oh, I like those stones, and I like that those metals, and I like this particular style," and you'll sit and you'll spend hours, I'm sure, collaborating with people. How do you price that? Because it's all well and good you go to American Swiss, forgive me, or Stearns. You get what you get, and you don't get upset. But if you're going to ask somebody to make you a piece of jewelry, it's a fundamentally different relationship that has to be established and built on.
For sure. Yeah, it's so personal. I mean, definitely with the bespoke pieces, it's people come to you and they want something that's going to last for years. So that's a huge thing for me. It needs to be really good quality that we produce in the end. And also something that means something to them. It's an heirloom. It's something that they're going to keep and treasure and pass on to their children. And so it's really, really important that that sort of aspect of it is fulfilled as well. I like to focus and listen to exactly what the client wants out of the piece and just make sure that it's something that they really love, because at the end of the day, they're spending a lot of money and it needs to be something gorgeous and something that just really makes them happy every day when they're wearing it, when they look at it, if they're giving it to someone. So that's a really, really important thing for me.
I don't know how anybody would dare to come to you to have something made for somebody else. Buying jewelry is such a deeply personal thing, and you've got to have an extraordinary amount of confidence. One, to go and buy a piece that exists, but to go and design something for somebody else is a massively courageous enterprise. How does that work out usually in your experience?
I know it is. It's a daunting thing, especially I find with men who are wanting to propose. It's a terrifying task. They've made a huge decision. They're spending their savings on something that's really, really important, and it marks an important occasion, in their lives. So I do a lot of chatting together with the client to get a sense of their style, their partner's style, and we do a little bit of Facebook stalking here and there. We luckily, girls often have Pinterest pages, so we can see kind of what their likes and dislikes are. But it's a very scary thing, designing for someone that you don't necessarily know.
I mean, there are lots of wonderful jewelers in South Africa making wonderful objects. And it is this ultimate idea of beneficiation. We have such great raw materials from South Africa. The metals are here. The stones are from here. We've got such a wide array for you to choose from. You've got your studio in Cape Town. This idea of beneficiating raw materials for clients, I'm sure, around the globe.
Sorry, I missed that, Bruce.
No, I mean, you've got this wonderful opportunity to beneficiate the product of South Africa's earth for clients, I'm assuming, around the world.
Yes, we get emails all the time with people asking, they want something that's specifically from South Africa. They love that it's locally made. They want to know that their stones came from South Africa or Africa. It's a connection to the place and the soil that it was all made out of. It's a great opportunity to sort of showcase what our country can produce.
Are you selling jewelry or are you selling art pieces?
It's a good question. I like to think little art pieces because there's so much love and attention put into each little thing that we send out of the studio. As I said, we've got a big focus on quality. I would far, far rather a client bought one amazing, like super special piece that they will hold onto for years instead of buying something every 6 months and maybe tossing it aside. I like to think that our pieces are little artworks going out into the world.
I mean, I look at your pieces and they're gloriously contemporary and they're gloriously classical in many respects as well. However, I look at jewelry from the past and everything dates. How do you design a piece of jewelry to give it wearability across generations? Because somebody who buys a piece from you today will happily wear it for the next 30 or 40 years. It doesn't mean that their children or grandchildren will want to wear the same piece. Is it possible to get multi-generational pieces designed?
Yeah, it's really, really difficult. But it is interesting to see the way styles are coming back. So, for instance, at the moment, there's a big interest again in signet rings, and everyone wants their family crest, and there's a lot of rings being pulled out of cupboards that have been sitting around for years that people haven't worn. And even granny's chains, everything is kind of coming to the surface. So we often, what we do is, not all of it dates. And I think that's always the case because there will always be trends. But the nice thing about jewelry is that it can be reworked and it can be
updated. That's the point. Thank you for making that point, because it's the ultimate in recyclability. The gold is the gold. The stones are the stones. They can be reworked to whatever the fashion is going to be 30 or 40 years from now.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we do it all the time. And it's fantastic because the stones get reused and the metal gets reused and the sentimentality of the piece still remains. But they have something fresh and something that they feel is new, but still has that history, which is awesome.
Anna Rosholt, thank you for sharing with us this evening, the founder and owner of Anna Rosholt Jewelry. Have a look at her website. Some glorious designs coming from there. No, she's not. Yes, she's a jeweler, but she's an artist as well. I would like to know from you this evening as we enter the final stretch of this first hour of the Friday evening edition of The Money Show. I would like to know from you as we gird our loins, prepare our for the Brutal Biz quiz. I would like to know the name of Turkey's currency, please. The country Turkey, not the bird, because it doesn't have a currency. What is the name of Turkey's currency on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702? It's not the splat, because that's what's happened to it this week. But what is the name of the currency of Turkey? That is your first question in tonight's Brutal Biz quiz on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Please do join us and play the Brutal Biz quiz.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Proud winners of the best service in Africa at the Euromoney Cash Management Survey 2021. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Before we get to the Brutal Biz quiz, just a bit of breaking news from S&P Ratings this evening. Two entirely predictable announcements today. S&P Ratings talking about Eskom, and it says Eskom will need continued tariff rises to be sustained cash flows because South African budget support is insufficient to cover Eskom's needs. That just does mean that you just need to brace yourself for higher and higher electricity prices, but André de Rait has been warning about that for some time. And then Transnet has been placed on credit watch negative by S&P. So in other words, if Transnet wants to borrow money, it's going to cost it even more. And they've got to get a turnaround going at Transnet really, really in a big hurry. And our banks have got to step up to the plate. So that means Transnet's got to be able to put a proposal on the table that says these are the returns that you can expect to get if you give us the 100 billion rand that we need to take our ports from the bottom of the league tables to restore the train lines and the overhead cables, which are being stolen at a rate of 5 or 6 or 10 Ks a day. So lots of work to do. S&P Ratings laying it out in black and white this evening.
702.
Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
Quick Brutal Biz quiz for you this evening. Mohammed in Boksburg is up first tonight on The Money Show. Mohammed, your first question this evening, what is the name of the Turkish currency, please?
The lira.
The lira, absolutely right. And the lira has been falling very, very sharply. The president keeps interfering, and it's a big lesson to us in South Africa, of course. Don't mess with the Reserve Bank. Which U.S. president appointed Jerome Powell for his first term as head of the U.S. Fed?
Joe Biden.
No, I'm afraid not, Mohammed. You fell for that one. Bretton Benoni.
Hello.
Who appointed Jerome Powell for his first term as head of the U.S. Fed?
Obama.
No, it's not, I'm afraid. Nice guesses. See, everyone's in denial about the other guy. Keith?
I'd have to say Bill Clinton is a guess.
No, it's not. See, everyone, nobody can even say it. It's like saying Voldemort or Macbeth. It's the other guy. Jowell in Joburg South. Jowell?
Oh, hi, this is Joe.
Hello, Joel. So your name on my screen is spelled J-O-W-E. A-E-L-L. So forgive me, Joel. Yes, hello, Joel. Who appointed Jerome Powell for his first term as chair of the US Fed?
Donald Trump.
It was Donald Trump. You could say Donald Trump, you see, but you cross your fingers while you say it, I'm sure. Yes, and then, of course, Joe Biden has renominated him for a second term. Which global snack maker makes Chappies bubblegum?
Wrigley.
Pardon?
Wrigley.
Wrigley's? No, I'm afraid not. No, it would, the flavour would last a bit longer if they did. Dumisani, there is a global snack maker that is looking at buying a business in South Africa. It is also the maker, I learned this week for the first time, of Chappies. Dumisani. Very rude, Dumisani. Very rude. Temba in Johannesburg.
Yes, Mondelez.
Mondelez, absolutely right. Mondelez, it actually is the biggest confectionery maker in South Africa. Amongst the things that it makes, it actually makes Chappies bubblegum. It makes Chomp, because it owns Cadbury's, and Lunch Bar. It also makes Dentine chewing gum. And of course, Chappies was originated in Johannesburg by Chapelet Sweets Factory by a man called Arthur Ginsburg. He was the head of marketing in the 1940s. And what I suggested to Evan Walker this evening, earlier on this week, is that the number one on the Chappies Did You Know papers, did you know that we are made by an American company? Indra Nooyi. We interviewed her for Other People's Money, and you're going to be hearing from her in the Best Bits of the Money Show coming up after Eyewitness News. Was the chief executive and chairman of which multinational beverage company that came to South Africa just as she was retiring and bought Pioneer Foods?
ABI.
No, Temper. No, Temper. Dan and Rosebank, I win this if you get this wrong.
Mondelez.
No. Maybe we can get Keegan and Kyle Army very quickly. Give me Keegan. Give me Keegan. Put us out of our misery, Keegan. Indra Nooyi used to run which global multinational?
PepsiCo.
Keegan, at the last, at the death, you become the wizard of the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening. Absolutely. And you're going to hear from her and other guests in the Best Bits of the Money Show coming up after Eyewitness News. Keegan, get yourself a T-shirt. I'm the wizard of the Biz Quiz by default. Keegan and Kyle Army.